It is nice to see everyone here. It's nice to have everyone here this morning. I would like all of us to open our Bibles and turn to the book of Deuteronomy. And in particular, turn to the book of Deuteronomy, the 16th chapter. We have another divine irony moment for this morning. I said something along these lines, and I laid some foundation for my sermon this morning last Wednesday night, and one of the elders told me, I had said, you know, this will preach, this will make a good sermon, and one of the elders said, yes, and I wouldn't mind hearing it as soon as this coming Sunday morning. That elder is the elder who is not present with us. So he's going to have to listen to it online. But I want for us to cover the first 17 verses of Deuteronomy 16 this morning. By the way, when's the last time we read this? When's the last time we read this text?
Yeah.
There we go. It's been a long time, huh? And some of us may never have actually sat down to actually read these verses before. But they're verses that nevertheless are extremely important. Now, what in the world am I doing with an outline of a thumbprint on the screen? Because what these verses are about is something extremely important, especially within the scheme of Israel's history and Israel's relationship with God. These verses, for them, are about maintaining their identity. And that's what Deuteronomy 16 is all about. It's about maintaining the identity that Israel had. Now, this is totally unplanned in every way, shape, and form. But how do we know what Israel's identity was? First of all, what was their identity? What was the prime definition of Israel and their relationship with God? Exodus chapter 19, verses 5 and 6. Exactly what Bob read from earlier this morning. Totally unplanned, but nevertheless laid a perfect foundation for our lesson this morning. Exodus chapter 19, verses 5 and 6, where God prefaces the statement, of course, in verse 4, as Bob read, "With you yourselves have seen how I took you out of Egypt, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples, for all of the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel." Israel's identity was as God's special covenant people. That was who they were. And that's going to be the foundation for the rest of our lesson this morning. But before we get into that, I want for us to ask ourselves, and to understand, excuse me, I'm having some allergy issues today. Don't worry, I'm not sick. I'm not going to get you sick. Like I often tell people, we love you, not your germs. I'm not bringing germs. This is just my time of the year. So, before we launch into this, I want for us to be able to think about what this means to them. And so I'm going to bring some examples of things that we can probably link to a little bit better in our lives. So, we live in the United States of America, right? We're here, we're all Americans. Summer is coming, which means it's time for barbecues and the beach and all the other wonderful things that summer brings. If you are lucky enough to still be in school and have a summer break, what I wouldn't give to go back. Well, I don't want to go back to being a teenager, but man, I miss summer breaks. Don't you guys miss summer breaks? All you adults in the room? But as Americans, when summer comes, what else do we start thinking is coming? Who said Christmas? You know how I feel about that before Thanksgiving. 4th of July, right? I mean, it's the holiday that tells our national origin story, right? I mean, what do we celebrate on the 4th of July anyway? What is it all about? What happened on the 4th of July? The Declaration of Independence was published. Okay? That's not when it was signed. It was signed over a period of weeks leading up to that. The last person, by the way, actually signed it on July 2nd, 1776. It didn't all get signed at once. That painting that you see of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, that's a lie, because all of the people who signed it were too busy running in and out of Philadelphia trying to make the Revolutionary War happen. And that took up so much of their time that whenever they were in Philadelphia, they stopped to put their little name right in that little section. Well, it's not a little section. There's a lot of names that got signed. But they stopped to sign their name over wherever their colony was, and so then they left on their business. But it was published on July 4th, 1776. My goodness, my brain. I woke up at 5 in the morning, and I couldn't go back to sleep. So, well, let's just see how we do today. July 4th, 1776. That's the date that we consider the birthday of our nation, although the Revolutionary War didn't end until 1783. But that's where we remember our national birthday, our origin story. And we teach that origin story of our revolution against England to all our children in 5th grade, in 8th grade, and in the 11th grade. American history, by law here in the United States. Those are the grades where we typically tend to teach American history, at least in California, 5th grade, 8th grade, and 11th grade U.S. history. And every year in U.S. history starts first with the colonization process and then the rebellion against England. They always skip the French and Indian Wars. I don't know why, but they do. And in the 4th of July, we have things that make it the 4th of July, right? It's not the 4th of July until you've seen what? Until you've seen those fireworks, right? It's not the 4th of July until you've had what? Barbecue. Not the 4th of July until you've grilled dead animal over fire. That's what makes it. But in all of these things that we have on the 4th of July, we have the flags hanging all over everywhere. Now, as cool as the fireworks are, and as much as I love a tasty burger, and you guys have seen me pack them down, what makes the 4th of July the 4th of July is us remembering that document. And what it means to us as a country, as a people. And remembering the Constitution, the national contract that binds us all together, which wasn't even ratified until 1789, by the way, 13 years after our publication of the Declaration of Independence. So, we have these things, and the 4th of July is a big holiday for us, right? So what holidays actually do? I mean, this is actually the point behind Deuteronomy 16, by the way, me bringing in this, is the 4th of July, what they do is they remind us of who we are and how we began, right? The 4th of July is about our rebellion against England, how we became an independent nation, that process, that long, many-year-long process. Going along with the 4th of July, the other quintessential American holiday. What's the other quintessential American holiday, by the way? We got the 4th of July, and what's the other one? Thanksgiving, guys. Come on, Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving. And that's the other quintessential American holiday. The 4th of July is about our rebellion against England to become an independent nation. Thanksgiving is about the establishment of the British colonies that we were before that independence. It's about how Anglo-Saxon Europeans got to the New World and stayed there and eventually became the United States. And so in these holidays, we remember where we come from, right? That's what these holidays are all about. It's about where we as a country come from. And so the holidays that God gave to the children of Israel were no different. They were designed to help the Israelites remember where they come from. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go ahead and launch straight into Deuteronomy 16 to look at three of the most important holidays. Now, as Rex read earlier this morning from verses 16 and 17, we're going to get to these verses eventually, but we're going to look at three holidays in particular. And what Moses says in Deuteronomy about these three holidays is that three times a year, all of your males shall appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Booths, or the Feast of Tents. They shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of the Lord your God that he has given you. So the first of the holidays that God gave to Israel that we're going to look at is the holiday of the Passover. And what Moses says in chapter 16, verse 1, is he says, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. So he lays the foundation for the reason why they observe the Passover is to remember. Remember that God brought you up out of Egypt by night. And you shall offer to the Passover sacrifice to the Lord your God from the flock or the herd at the place that the Lord will choose to make his name dwell there. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat it with unleavened bread, the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that all the days of your life you may remember the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. No leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh that you sacrifice on the evening of the first day remain all night until morning. You may not offer the Passover sacrifice within any of your towns that the Lord your God is giving you, but at the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name dwell in it, there you shall offer the Passover sacrifice in the evening at sunset, at the time when you came out of Egypt. Most translations will say twilight, which is actually not sunset. It's different. Well, we can talk about that when we get to the crucifixion of Jesus. And you shall cook it and eat it at the place that the Lord your God will choose. And in the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. For 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And on the seventh day there shall be a solemn assembly to the Lord your God. You shall do no work on it. It shall be a Sabbath. The Passover is designed for one purpose and one purpose alone. If we go back to Exodus 12, we read all the rules, all the regulations that were required. They were supposed to slaughter the Passover lamb at 3 in the afternoon. By the way, that word twilight means in Hebrew the time between the days. The day in Hebrew, according to Hebrew, the Hebrew calendar, the Jewish calendar, the day begins at sunset. So the ending of the day is actually at noon. From noon to sunset is the end of the day. And the time between the days is halfway through the ending of the day. If you say sunset is generally around 6 p.m., what's halfway between noon and 6? Well, 3. That's when you kill. I was about to say crucify the Passover lamb. That works just as well because that's when Jesus was crucified. That's when he died on the cross. It was 3 p.m. on Friday afternoon. The very time the priests and the people of Israel were supposed to slaughter the Passover lamb. And so you've got this, and then they're commanded to eat the lamb, to eat that sacrifice. And this is the only sacrifice that the common people of Israel ate, aside from the peace offering. The whole nation gathers to assemble, to eat, to remember. And when they did this, they were to eat this meal standing, with their belt tied around their waist, with their walking stick in their hand, with packs on their backs, ready to leave. Even though they weren't actually leaving, they only left the first Passover, but they were to gather and to eat that way every single year, to remember God brought them up out of the land of Egypt and the house of slavery. The Passover celebrates Israel leaving the land of slavery. It celebrates their freedom. It celebrates their independence as a nation in and of themselves. The next feast that God tells Moses to command the children of Israel to partake of is often called the Feast of Weeks. You shall count 7 weeks. This is 7 weeks from the Passover, 50 days after the Passover, which is in the New Testament. It's called Pentecost, 50 days. Penta, there you go. You shall count 7 weeks. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time the sickle is first put to the standing grain. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God, with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. You shall rejoice before the Lord your God, and you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, the Levite who is within your towns, the sojourner, the fatherless, the widow, and the widow who are among you, at the place that the Lord your God shall choose to make his name dwell there. You shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. This holiday, Pentecost, the Feast of Weeks, was about slavery and about the fact that they were slaves in Egypt. Now, it's connected to Passover, but the thing that makes this different is that Passover is about freedom. Pentecost is about a home. If you notice, it takes place after the harvest. It's the early harvest festival. It's the early harvest feast. And when we read the book of Joshua and the book of Deuteronomy, we put them together, we read all the things that Moses says about the Lord your God is giving you a land. When you go into it to dwell in it, to possess it, you shall live in houses that what? You did not build. You shall reap fields that what? You did not sow. That this land, in a way that no other place had ever been, was now their home. Slaves worked in the field and got to keep nothing from what they did, from what they harvested, from what they reaped. They kept nothing. But now they reap, and it all belongs to them after they give the first fruits to God. After they give the first fruits to God, it's all theirs. And it's all theirs because now they have a home. A place to call their own. And because they have a place to call their own, they gather around the place which God calls His own to thank Him for the place that they call home. It's about that. That's why Pentecost was such a big deal. This is all, by the way, connected with the origin story of Israel as a nation. Are we sort of seeing that right now? So we've got these first two holidays, Passover, and we got Pentecost. And it's about freedom from slavery. It's about getting a home. Well, what about the 40 years in between? Aha, the Feast of Tents. You shall keep the Feast of Booths 7 days when you have gathered in the produce from your threshing floor. This is the late harvest festival. In your wine press, you shall rejoice in the feast, you and your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow who are within your towns. For 7 days you shall keep the feast of the Lord your God in the place that the Lord will choose, because the Lord your God will bless you in all the produce and all the work of your hands, so that you will be altogether joyful. Now, the Feast of Tents is after the harvest, the second harvest, the late harvest. And what makes this such a big deal, and why this is important, is because this is the second harvest festival. And they were told to go and to live in makeshift temporary shelters, because in between their freedom from slavery and God giving them a home, that's all they had. And so this feast commemorates that time in the wilderness, during which God shepherded them. He fed them. He provided for them. He gave them everything that they needed. Their clothes didn't rot. Their sandals didn't wear out. I would love to never have to buy another pair of shoes in my entire life. I would love for my wife to never have to buy another pair of shoes in her entire life. I'm just kidding. She's really good about that. She loves shoes, but I say that for humorous purposes only. She does love shoes, but she does not go crazy in any way, shape, or form. I'm very grateful for that. Love you, babe. I'm trying to dig myself out. But this Feast of Tents is about that time in between. It's about God's loving provision for them. And all of these holidays, it's about bringing them from the Passover to Pentecost. That's what the Feast of Tents is about. So all of these holidays celebrate their origin as a people, where they came from. All of these holidays go back to Exodus chapter 19, verses 5 and 6. All three of them. So, where am I going with this? What's the big deal? Well, our worship today. By the way, holiday, what does it come from? What's the etymology of the term? Holy day. It's a holy day. This day shall be holy to the Lord, your God, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. our worship today. We go to Romans 6. And we look at Paul and what he wrote in Romans 6 about slavery and death and the comparison between these things. And he says that our lives before Jesus, in our lives before Jesus, we are in slavery to sin, we walk in darkness, and we have no hope but death. Romans 6, 23, the wages of sin is death. But that whole chapter is about freedom from that slavery, freedom from darkness, freedom from death. When the Israelites were slaved in Egypt, the only hope they had of escaping that slavery was what? Death. And one of the earliest names in Hebrew for the land of Egypt is not Egypt, but the land of darkness. I mean, that whole analogy of the Exodus is all over Romans 6. And so when we come together, what do we remember? What do we remember in our prayers? What do we remember in our songs? What am I talking about right now in this very sermon? Freedom. Freedom from sin, freedom from that bondage, freedom from death, freedom from the land of darkness, freedom from slavery. I am alive now in Christ Jesus in a way that I never was before I became a part of His nation. And the same is true for all of us who have made our pledge to God. We remind ourselves of our promised home in heaven. The way the Hebrew writer writes of it in Hebrews chapter 4, he says, there is yet a Sabbath rest, a land of rest awaiting the people of God. We have a home in heaven. Paul says in Ephesians chapter 1 that we have all the beautiful, the wonderful, the fabulous, the fantastic, the glorious blessings of Jesus Christ in the heavenly places. We sing songs, right? Out of my bondage, sorrow, and strife, Jesus I come, Jesus I come. Looking for a city, there's that song too. There's this, when all of God's singers get home, when the saints go marching in, our songs are full of this. And we remember God's provision for us while we wait to get from one point to the next. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul lays out his comparison of Israel to the church, and he does it by using the years of the wilderness wanderings. And he says, we're just like them because we're walking around here sojourning on this earth that is not our home. And the Hebrew writer says of Abraham in Hebrews chapter 11, that Abraham left his home not knowing where he was going because he was looking for a city whose builder and architect is God. And that is the New Jerusalem. That is the Church of Jesus Christ. When we come together, we remember that God provides for us and shepherds us. Our songs are full of that too, right? There's that song, Looking for a City, again, that goes back both ways. Here we are, but straying pilgrims, here our path is often dim. This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. Do you want me to go on? I could go, we could go, all we got to do is just take this thing, open it up, and just go from one page, from the first page to the last. Our songs are all about this stuff. They remind us of who we are. That's why we gather here today, is to remind ourselves of who we are, to maintain our identity. Do you want to know why Israel stopped being Israel? Why they stopped being God's people? Because they forgot who they were. You want to know why they forgot who they were? Because they didn't keep the feast that God told them to keep. They didn't have the holiday. They didn't observe the holidays God told them to observe. The sad note of Josiah's reign was that in the 18th year of his reign as king over Judah, He enforced the Passover. He had the people celebrate the Passover. And in the 18th year of his reign, the Passover that he kept and that he kept every year thereafter was so great, so magnificent, that Israel had not celebrated a Passover like that since the days of Samuel the prophet. And that means not Saul, not David, not Solomon, not Jehoshaphat, nobody, no king, no leader of God's people had kept the Passover like Josiah since Samuel, which is about 500 years, guys. For 500 years, the Passover was not what it was supposed to be. And one of the other sad counterpoints in Nehemiah chapter 8 that we didn't get to this morning in our Bible class, that I wanted to because it would have laid a foundation for this morning's sermon, but since we didn't get to it, we have to bring it up now, that in Nehemiah 8, Nehemiah has the people celebrate the Feast of Tents, the Feast of Booths. And he gathers them all and he says, look, build temporary structures for yourselves, just like the law says, and have them live in these tents for a week, live in these temporary shelters for a week. And they did it on top of their houses, in the courtyard of their homes, outside the walls of the cities that they lived in, and they celebrated the Feast of Tents. And what Nehemiah 8 says is that no one had had them celebrate the Feast of Tents at all since the days. In the English Standard phrases, his name is Jeshua, son of Nun. Joshua, son of Nun, successor to Moses. From Joshua, all throughout the time period of the Judges, all throughout the time period of the United Kingdom, all throughout the time period of the Divided Kingdom, all throughout the 70 years of captivity in Babylon, and in the intervening years of the return from exile to Nehemiah, they didn't celebrate this feast. No wonder they forgot that God provided for them. No wonder they forgot the wilderness wanderings. No wonder they forgot the manna and the quail and the clothes that never rotted and the sandals that never wore out. So what's the lesson? Today is our holiday. Acts chapter 20, verse 7. The saints assembled on the first day of the week. On the first day of the week, as you gather to break bread, Paul's instructions to the Corinthian church. Sunday, that's our holiday. This is our Passover. This is our Pentecost. This is our Feast of Tents. This is all of it. Lesson number one, be there. Three times a year, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Booths. Be there. Israel was commanded to come together because it gave them a sense of community, and it forced them to remember the very core of their identity, that they were God's people. They had entered into a covenant with God, and they were supposed to remember that. These holidays are designed to keep them holy, to keep them pure, to help them remember that they are God's. And when they stopped doing it, no wonder they stopped being God's. God's people, that is. Now, I'm not saying that when people aren't here, that automatically makes them not God's people. Don't get me misinterpreted. Please don't misinterpret me. An attendance is not always a sign of righteousness outside of your presence at the assembly. I have known people that have been here Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, and yet still fail to live holy and righteous lives before God. I know, right? All I'm saying is that a lot of the time there is a connection. That absence from the worship assembly more often than not is really just a symptom of something else that we're struggling with that is getting in the way of us and our relationship with God. We have an obligation to come together. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25, right? Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. But what it is, the real purpose for this is to help us maintain our sense of identity as God's people. Bob read 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, exactly what Moses says in Exodus 19, 5 and 6. Peter just lifts the language right off the page. As a matter of fact, if you compare the Septuagint, the Old Testament in Greek, with 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, it's pretty much identical. The key phrases, the identifiers, are identical. And when we neglect the assembly, we will inevitably begin to forget who we are. And when we come here, by the way, this verse, you shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of the Lord your God that he has given you. The very third sermon I preached here. And when I say the third, I'm counting the two that I delivered while Lalo was in Cuba 10 years ago when I filled in for him. I count those as my first two. The very third sermon that I preached here on the first Sunday morning in May in 2014. The sermon that I delivered was from Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, being a living sacrifice. And what that means is we give to God a sacrifice of holy actions out of gratitude, out of thanksgiving. The song that we said, I thank you, Lord. And what God says through Moses is, you shall not come before the Lord empty-handed. We're here. How full are our hands of holy actions that we have done through this last week? How full are they with sacrifice and with gratitude and with thankfulness to God for making us who we are? The minute we stop coming to God with sacrifices of thanksgiving, the way we're told to offer them in Psalm 50, is the minute we need to start to remember what happened to Israel. What happened to them? When they neglected God, God turned his back on them. I don't think I need to extend it any further. You guys have pretty good imaginations and can see where this is going. We need to remind ourselves of who we are, why we're here. But it's not just about being here. It's about taking that sense of identity and purpose so that when we leave here, we can carry that out to everybody else. That is the light that we shine before the world, our identity and purpose as God's people, as children of our Heavenly Father. Let us never forget that. If you're here this morning, as Bob also read in preparation for the communion, our entry into our covenant with God, Peter lays that out as well in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. He says, baptism now saves you, not as the removal of dirt from the flesh, but as the pledge to God of a good conscience. If you're here, and you cannot lay claim to this identity as God's child, as a member of God's nation, we beg of you to join us, please. We have the water prepared if your spirit is willing. If that's what you'd like to do, or if there's any way we can assist you, any other way that we can meet any need you have, please come forward and let us know what that might be as we stand and sing song number 603.